Studs! Studs! Studs!
Okay, all right. All right, it is the Conway and Whitman Show. We're live at 97.1 Free FM. Tim Conway Jr. and Brian David Whitman. He'll be back tomorrow. But so we wish him well. And I'm sorry, gang, and I hate to do this during the show because it's wildly unprofessional, but John Salwin is here. Let's turn Johnny's mic on. He does all the commercials for 97.1 Free FM. You do an excellent job. Not all of them, but a lot of them, right?
Most of them, yes. Okay. Thank you, Tim.
And you want me to read a line here that you have to stick into a spot and has to be done in the next 5 minutes?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, this is how a typical session goes, and I'll try to leave some of the swearing out, but you just need the one line, right?
Just the one line.
Okay. And one lucky player will win a Ferrari for the weekend, compliments of singlespokerparty.com.
Awesome.
It's good?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. You know what? It's usually a lot of swearing and, you know, do it this way, do it that way.
Well, I figured maybe you didn't want to dump yourself out, so it's not a regular session.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Tim.
It's usually filled with lots of F words because I'm not that good at cold reading. Surprisingly, I know you think I'm very well educated. I went to Harvard for my undergrad and then Yale for my graduate school. And you think a guy who went through that much formal education would be able to read quicker, and I just can't. All right, Barack Obama gave a terrific speech today about race relations, and everybody's talking about it because race is still an issue in this country and has been forever and may be for some time. And he was talking about Reverend Wright. Reverend Wright was his pastor or priest, I guess pastor, right, in Chicago, and had some unflattering things to say about the United States government, about causing Katrina and 9/11, and there was something about the government caused AIDS, and there's a lot of theories there that Obama tried to separate himself from. And he came up with a great sort of way to put it where America could understand what he was trying to say. But he talked about his racist grandmother. And I think that if you go back, I'm 44. My grandparents, if they were alive today, and God rest their soul, they would have been, my grandfather would have been 100 years old next year. 100 years old.
Are you serious?
Yes. And my grandmother, I believe, would be 98 right now. And they're no longer with us, but the two are the most beautiful people on the planet. And I think about them every single day, if not, every hour. Fond memories of my dad's parents, two of the greatest people on the planet. And any kind gesture I have towards anybody, whether it's holding a door open or whatever it is, being nice to people, having manners. It mostly came from them and observing the way they treat people. So they were really outstanding people. And I think anybody who has a close relationship with their grandparents is a little more solid person. If you knew your grandparents and you had a great relationship with your grandparents, I think in the long run, you might have a leg up when it comes to relationships with other people. I know my wife had a beautiful relationship with her grandfather, Leroy Clark, and I did too. I knew him, and I only knew him for about 5 or 6 years before he passed away. But he reminded me a lot of my grandfather too. He was a very honest guy, very funny guy, and cared about everybody. And I think that that a lot of that shaped who my wife is nowadays. But anyway, so he talked about his grandmother and his racist grandmother, and we're going to play an audio clip for you here. If you missed the speech, it was a great speech. I mean, obviously he has something to gain from giving a speech like that. He wants to be the president of the world, which, the president of the United States really is the most powerful person on the planet. And so he had everything to gain. But I think he's also doing a lot of hard work to try to separate himself from Reverend Wright, who was the pastor, whose his views were a little far out there for most Americans. All right, here's what he had to say about his grandmother, and I believe his grandmother was a white woman. Let's listen to this. Here we go.
I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me. A woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe.
Hmm. Now, my grandparents never went that far. They never used the N-word, obviously. They never were racist around me. But they had friends that let that word fly and let those terms fly and were as racist as possibly you could be. And I remember this happened in Sugar Falls in Ohio, outside of Cleveland. And I must have been about 10 years old when this happened. But my grandparents had a very good friend that lived next door. And the father in the house, he must have been in his 80s or 90s. And his wife must have been about 85 as well. So they were not in great shape. They were an older couple. And I was over at their house. My dad was over there as well. And this woman had hired two guys to come in and work in the backyard. And she wanted to move a large rock that was sitting in the middle of her backyard because they're going to put a driveway in there. And they hired two people to come over, and it happened to be two black guys that came over and worked their ass off all day to try to move this huge stone that must have weighed 2 or 3 tons. They broke it up and then hauled it away. And I remember very, very distinctly the woman took these two cups of coffee out to these two black guys who are working in the backyard. And they each drank the cup of coffee. They were very nice. You know, said thank you. And, you know, she paid them and they went on their way. And then I remember her bringing the coffee cups back into the house. And the old man who owned the house, who ran the house, and his son lived with him as well, took the coffee cups and threw them away, saying, I'll never drink out of the same cup as a black guy. Now, my dad was there when this happened, and he witnessed this happen. And again, I was only maybe 10 or 11 years old. He took me out of the house. He said, we got to go back to my grandmother lived, my dad's mother lived across the driveway. And we went back into my grandmother's yard. And before we were in the house, my dad stopped me. And he said, obviously you just saw what happened over there with the coffee cups. And I said, yeah, I said, that was sort of odd. And he said, I remember this exactly where I was standing, right in the middle of the driveway, right under the a big oak tree that they had. And my father said to me, he said, if I ever catch you doing anything like this, it'll be the end of you. It's not the way you treat people. Those people are too old to change, but you're not. And trust me, that's not the way to go through life. And I never want to hear you ever use any terms like that or even think of treating people differently because of their skin color. And I can remember exactly, you know, where I was standing when he said this. I remember if I were to go to Sugar Falls right now, back in Ohio, I could probably within the square foot tell you where I was standing, because it was a very powerful thing my dad said to me. He never threatened me. He just said, this is not the way to treat people. And you've got to know that. These people are too old, but you've got to know that's not the way to treat people. But it's interesting that even, you know, three generations back, if you go back to, you know, my parents and my grandparents, they were probably 100 years old. They would be 100 years old to, either this month or last month. I think my grandfather would have been 100 years old in February. So happy birthday to you, Papa. And my grandmother would have been 98. And yet they had friends who were very, very racist. They had a neighbor who had a dog. And I can remember this. And I can remember, even thinking this was odd, because I was coming from California where people were a little more open to, you know, talking about race and interacting with other races. But a neighbor that lived three houses down had a dog, and that dog's name was the N-word. And that was in 1972 or 73. And I always thought, you know, that is, and the people who owned the dog didn't think anything of it. You know, that's just the way they rolled. It was really sort of an odd thing to go back there and hear that, you know, a woman come to the back porch and yell out that word, you know, come here, N-word. And then the dog would show up. And the dog was white, by the way. Anyway, so your grandparents probably either knew somebody or they were racist themselves. How racist were you, was your family, three generations ago? And I'm not talking about your dad, who's maybe, you know, 40 years old or 50 years old. I'm talking about your grandparents, especially if you're in your 40s and your grandparents would now be about 100 years old. But what kind of racist things did you experience as a kid from your grandparents that you can still remember to this day? Here are the phone numbers. 520-9710. That's 520-9710. And 888-520-9710. Now, another thing that my, actually my great uncle used to do this. But he would take us out for, we're running McDonald's every once in a while. And he would take us out for fast food, whether it be McDonald's or Arby's, wherever it was. And again, the older people, they love Arby's for some reason. I don't know whether it you know, slides through easier or what it is about Arby's, but a lot of old people enjoy that. My grandparents did, my great uncle, great aunt. And I remember very, very clearly going into a fast food place with my great uncle and my great aunt. And there was a black guy working there, and they put us, all six kids, back in the car, and we went to another fast food place where there wasn't a black guy working there. And that is not, I mean, that wasn't back in, you know, 1825. You know, that's in the 70s. That's like 1971, 72, 73, where, you know, people were, again, you know, the race was a major issue. And you can't believe, you know, how so many things have changed so quickly in the last, you know, 25 or 30 years. I mean, nobody on the planet would ever call their dog the N-word. Nobody on the planet would ever, you know, not go to a fast food place because there wasn't, you know, there was a black guy or an Asian guy or a Hispanic guy, if you were white, working there. But it happens. It happened, you know, time and time again. Listen, up until 3 years ago, my wife and I, my wife is from Oregon, and there's a bar, a big bar in town that we used to go to, you know, almost nightly, you know, enjoy ourselves. And behind the bar on a sign that probably was 5 feet wide by 2.5 feet tall, like a rectangular shape behind the bar. And there was a light on it, too. So it wasn't like it was a mistake that it was there. But in big letters, it said, no queens in the Marines. And that was 2004, 2005, the last time I saw that. So when you do get out of the big city, when you do get out of Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, San Diego, Miami, you do experience a lot of racism in this country. You know, a lot of people still throwing that N-word around and very casual about it, too. It really is eye-opening, especially if you've been in Los Angeles or New York for 10, 15 years and you haven't been out, you know, into, you know, the Midwest or the Deep South, especially. The Deep South is amazing. When you get down to the Deep South, how radical racists still survive there and still use those terms. I remember watching NASCAR, and who's the NASCAR guy, Junior? What's his name? What is it? Yeah, Dale Earnhardt Jr. I can't think of the dude's name. Not that I'm not a big fan of NASCAR, but MTV paid him, you know, a couple of bucks to go through the infield interviewing people. And I remember seeing this a couple of years ago, where he's interviewing people in the infield of a NASCAR race, and he's interviewing people about why there aren't any black guys in NASCAR, and very casually, while on camera, and they knew they were going to be on MTV. And Dale Earnhardt is interviewing them. They start using the N-word on video camera. I mean, on TV. So you can imagine how comfortable some people are in their own home. All right. What kind of racism did you experience from three generations ago? I'm not talking about, you know, your father, but your grandparents, especially if they're like my grandparents. And they were in their, you know, would have been in their late 90s or almost 100 right now. Let's talk to Chad in Santa Monica. You're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Hey, all right.
Hey, I'm from Ohio, ironically, as you're telling your Ohio story. Well, first off, my grandma uses colored a lot, not the N-word, but she still, to this day, uses colored, just, you know, two generations back. And then my great-great-uncle was describing his black neighbors and trying to say how great they were, And basically, he said, you know, those black neighbors, they're just as good as white neighbors. Like, that's the measuring stick, you know?
Is that right?
Yeah, but he liked them, but that was his language, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to you and I, that sounds racist, but to him and his friends, it wasn't racist at all.
Right.
You know what? In a weird way, it was a huge compliment to those people.
Right. Yeah.
In his mind, he was like being, you know, Mr. 2008 and complimenting these people.
That's true.
It really is amazing. All right, buddy, thanks for calling. All right, 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Barack Obama gave a speech today and talked about his grandmother, and he couldn't separate himself from his grandmother, even though he separated himself from her statements. He couldn't do it from the woman, and I completely understand that. Here's what he had to say earlier today.
I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street.
Yeah, it's your fear, huh, Jerry? Didn't you tell me that once? Get out of here, Jerry. All right, Daniel in Los Angeles, 97.1. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, when I was little, I mean, you know, my grandma, you know, like your grandparents, you remember them being the sweetest people in the world. But
dude, I hate to say it, but it sounds like you have your grandmother's phone. Keisha in Compton, you're on 97.1 Free FM.
Hey, Conway, I love you.
Hey, love you, baby. Look at you.
probably your only black listener from Compton. But
no, that's not true. As a matter of fact, in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to open the phone, and anybody who calls from Compton, we'll give them a prize. I bet we'd get 100 calls. All right, what do you got?
My grandfather, I grew up in Compton, black community predominantly. My grandfather did, you know, work that was, you know, predominantly with black people, and he was from Texas. My grandmother was from Georgia. And, you know, racist comments and things like that would come from his mouth all the time. Like, one thing was he didn't like anything of anyone of a different sexual orientation, so I have a cousin who's gay. And he would say little snide remarks like, hey, fella, you know, it was a girl. And she would say, hey, fella. Or he would let her into the kitchen some holidays because he would say that she was nasty. Or, like, you know, he would just say, you know, cracker was just the word to say. Cracker and honky was the word to say around, you know, when he talked about white people.
Right.
And once when I was visiting Georgia with my grandmother's sisters, we were out in the park, and my brothers got separated from the family reunion, and they went to play basketball with some white kids that were in the park. And, you know, we were looking all over for them, and once we found them, you know, they told them, told my aunties where they were. And she was like, you don't trust no white people? And we were in Georgia, you know, not in rural Georgia. We were in Atlanta.
Wow.
So it's just amazing to see the generations, you know, grow up, and especially away from the South, you know, you don't think anything of, you know, different races and genders and sexual orientations gathering together. But
right. But I've been to the Deep South. My dad worked in Atlanta for a couple of years when I was a child, and I went to visit him quite often. And I understand why there's a lot of black people that want to live in downtown Atlanta, because you leave that city 5 miles in either direction,
yeah,
or any direction, and it gets real tight for black people around there.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little tight. Like, you kind of feel the tension anywhere you go, especially when you're out of your bubble. I would imagine, Conway, if you came and hung out in downtown Compton, you would stick out like a sore thumb, and you would feel it, because people would say little things or give you kind of look. Now, I probably won't feel the same amount of tension as you would, you know, nowadays, because people are more, you know, people embrace different cultures wherever you go.
Right.
But it's still a certain amount of tension. But the racism, you know, it was my grandfather. My grandfather passed away less than 10 years ago. So, you know, he still held on to the things that, you know, he had to grow up with in Texas in the 1940s, 30s, and 20s.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? And much like Barack Obama, you made a conscious decision not to correct him whenever he said those terms, because you loved him and you knew that you were not going to change him.
Right. And he didn't know any better. You know what I mean? It's like he had to deal with the things that he had to deal with when he was when he was a young man. And yeah, the negative experiences that he had certainly trickled into his adult life. And like you said, once you get 60 years old, you're not changing.
No, it's over. Hey, once you get 35, you're not changing.
Right. My son is going to, you know, think of me as some kind of crazy lone woman, too, saying certain things that I say because of the experiences that I've had in my, you know, 20s. teens and, you know, as a child.
Absolutely. Hold on one second here. We want to talk to Gerald, who also is in Compton. Gerald, you're on 97.1. How are you?
Yeah, how you doing?
Before we get to your topic or your point here, can you tell Keisha that we have a huge audience in Compton?
Matter of fact, my father's the chief police of Compton. I'm from Compton. I live in Beverly Hills right now, but I'm from Compton.
All right, well, you're killing my point here. All right, thanks for calling, Keisha.
All right,
take care of yourself. Gerald, I thought you were calling from Compton. It said Compton.
I'm calling from Compton, but I do have a place in Beverly Hills. But anyway,
Currently the chief of police in Compton?
He was the chief of police. He's, as a matter of fact, hired the last five chiefs. He's dead now, but he had hired the last five chiefs. His name is James Carrington. But anyway, I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm 58. And in my day, I used to go to my grandmother's house, and the white insurance people and all the other book collectors would just come into the house. It was just that was just their thing. They could come in any black person's house and collect insurance money.
They just walked in?
They just walked in the front door. They coming in, and she's in the bed. They go, hey, Mr. Calhoun, you know, I'm coming for the train. Oh, yeah, it is right here, sir. And as a matter of fact, they still have the slave market downtown. They don't sell slaves there anymore. They sell fruit and vegetables. The slave market there, and the Calhoun statue is in the park down there. And Calhoun didn't like black people, so they used to shine his statue because it's like a brass-looking statue. And they found out that he was half black, so they stopped shining it now. So the bird got crap all over it now.
Jesus Christ. That's amazing, huh? And that's happening in L.A.
There you go.
Jesus Christ.
As a matter of fact, I was the first black person in junior high in Compton, the first black person in high school in Compton. And when I moved to Beverly Hills, I used to get pulled over every other day just walking down the street.
Now, when you were the first black guy that went to Compton High, what year was that?
Dominguez High.
Oh, Dominguez High, which is right next to Compton.
Yeah, next to Compton. Yeah. I graduated in 67. I went there in 64, and I went to the junior high, I think, in 61, I think, something like that.
And what was that area like back in the 60s? Because I know that Inglewood...
They used to chase me, because Compton was pretty much white, and they used to chase me. When I went to high school, I used to ride my bike the year prior to going. So I used to play basketball in the gym at the high school. And I ride my bike there, and pretty much where my family moved to, they used to chase me in cars on my bike all the way to the high school. The white guys used to do that.
How old are you now?
I'm 58. I'll be 59 in May.
You know, I was playing cards at Commerce Casino, and I also like to play it occasionally at Hollywood Park. And I do have a theory. I've been working on a theory. Maybe you can confirm this.
Okay.
But there's not a black guy alive who is over 50 that doesn't have an amazing sense of humor.
Especially from the South. Everybody from the South. Every black person from the South is funny.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who plays cards.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you gamble, you go to the track. If you're over 50, man, I guess you had to...
They lie a lot at barbecues. They all lie a lot at barbecues. Every black person over 50 lie at the barbecue. They talk about how many white women they just had last week.
Right. Well, you know what? I do that, too. All right, hold on one second. We're going to give you a copy of the Lost Planet Extreme Condition for PlayStation 3. It's a 22nd century. And Earth, excuse me, I'm in ruins. And mankind must move on. Rated T for teen, only from Capcom, man. Look at that. All right, Barack Obama gave a great speech today about race relations and talking about his grandmother, who said some racist things. And he framed it in a way that I think we can all understand and probably separate him from his pastor, Reverend Wright, that if your grandparents or your great uncle, your great grandmother said these racist things, you're not going to change them. They're in their 80s. And Obama's not going to change that preacher. He's probably in his 70s or 80s. But he doesn't have to believe in everything the guy said, and you wouldn't disown your grandmother from saying something like that. So I think it was a great speech. Maybe it helped race relations. Who knows? But if you heard your grandmother or grandfather, somebody in that generation, somebody who was born in early 1900s, the 1910, 1920 in that area, what kind of racism did you experience? 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. It is the Conway and Whitman Show. We're live at 97.1 Free FM.